Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Finley Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening eargasm pleasure. From the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, and the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, which is incidentally Fukushima irradiated and everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guest, allegedly, is Mark LeClaire. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Vinny. Thank you. It's great to be here.
You look remarkably distinguished. We've got him on the webcam, ladies and gentlemen. So he's kind of like like a Hogwarts professor, but more kempt. And I'd love it if you'd just explain to the audience who may not be familiar with the work, just who you are and what you do, and also ensure that you plug your website, because that's what the show is really kind of like. It's like a bathtub. It doesn't really work very well without a plug.
Okay. I write a blog called The Wrong Way Wizard, which is an occult media blog, where I look at occult symbols in media and what they mean, if anything at all. And I guess I would call myself a conspiracy theorist, and I'm proud of that label. Maybe even a conspiracy philosopher might be more along the lines of the way that I go, because I'm interested not just in the details.
Well, hold on, Mark. We're having a bit of a problem with your line there.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, it is having a bit of a problem. What we should do probably, we've got your phone number here. So if you actually leave the Skype on but mute your microphone so we can keep the video running, we'll be able to get you on the phone. So
sounds fine.
All right, so let's see if we've got your phone number here. LeClaire. There we are. There's his number. Just popping it into the AFR studio now. And there you go. So he'll just ring up right now. Should be calling up any second. He's got the phone on him. He's a good man. All right. Okay. Well, it was interesting that I described you as somewhat of a Hogwarts professor, and then all of a sudden here you are as the wrong way wizard. All right. So I think we have him on the phone now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Now, what you need to do is just mute your Skype microphone because it's coming through on that side too. All right.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Great. Yeah. I hope this should. Are you coming? Am I coming through loud and clear?
You're coming through twice because your microphone for the Skype is still on. So if you find the little microphone symbol on that and just click it on to mute, then it should be
muted.
Fine.
Okay.
Beautiful. Okay, we've got you through the video and everything's fine. So why don't we just go through that again? You know, you said you were proud to be called a conspiracy theorist, and so am I, you know?
Yeah, well,
My definition for a conspiracy theorist is somebody who believes that there's powerful people who have a lot of influence who use their power to maintain their influence.
Oh, that's exactly, that has to be true. And I added there before we got cut off that I consider myself to be a conspiracy philosopher, basically, as well. And I'm looking for the overarching philosophy that proves a conspiracy theory to be a valid form of understanding of our social reality. And you mentioned power and influence there. And the thing about power and influence is that there are actually, believe it or not, mathematical properties, very, very simple mathematical models that show why power structures such as that must exist in this world and that they do exist, and that the type of influence and power that they exert over us is very real, essentially. And the shape of a pyramid itself is the exact same as a pile of sand that is poured randomly onto the ground. If you make a large pile of sand, it even squares off into four sides, eventually not keeping a completely conical shape, and you'll have four ridges going up each one of the four points at a corner. So what we have here is we can see how the very development of time, of linear time itself, becomes a pyramid scheme. And it emanates from the top down in the exact same way that we imagine conspiracy theory might do so, essentially, that there are people in power. And the thing about power is, and this is a logical fact, is that people in power don't give up their power, basically. And in a very real way, this applies to all of us. And this is what the word conspiracy means. It comes from the Latin to breathe together. So in a sense, there's a kind of a vast conspiracy that's going on, and we're all a part of it, too. And that's a very important aspect of it, is that we each are a piece of a puzzle that holds reality itself together in a way that is quite can be quite challenging and quite dark, if you know what I mean.
I do know exactly what you mean. There's an element of denial within society that, and in fact, I don't know how long it took through the education system and through the development of society, but there's laws that say that it's illegal, it's against the law to be part of a conspiracy, yet people believe that they don't exist, as if there's laws against perhaps being a leprechaun or something of that nature.
Yeah, well, no, the fact is there is no law against being part of a conspiracy, because law is something that is applied from the top down. Again, we have to be aware, if we're honest with ourselves about social structure, is that people in power wield that influence to their own benefit. I've listened to your show a fair bit, and I know that you often refer to the idea of the working world and being employed as being a slave, essentially. And this is of course exactly right. If we are working our lives away for the profit of others, for the comfort of others, or for the egregious lifestyle of others, then we are essentially slaves. So as you go up the chain, you look at the slave owners, and then you find out that behind them there are even more powerful slave owners. And the slavery continues all the way to the top of the pyramid. And this is why, on the American dollar bill, the I at the top is shown as separate from the pyramid, basically. It floats above. It flies above the weather. It is not directly connected to the little people, basically. They are looking at us, essentially, and they use media to look at us. If anyone who watches the news today, and I'm a news junkie, there's nothing I love to sit down and see what's on CNN or BBC.
Oh, just hook the news feed to my veins.
Yeah, well, the reason it's interesting is because it's a tool, it's a game that's being played with us, basically. And it's a very, very high-level game where it's the game of convincing people, of winning hearts and minds. That's what it's really about. And the whole idea of human progress is built around this model. Because we imagine a utopia, a perfect world, to be a world where the sense of responsibility to the future didn't exist, basically. Where we could enjoy a life supposedly in the moment, right? And, of course, these New Age philosophies, this is what they're now selling, is living life in the moment. But this is all just a kind of a sales technique, because the humanity must be driven forward to keep linear time going. And it's interesting. I'm looking at the American Freedom Radio symbol right now, which is, of course, it's a tower. And above that tower are the spiraling circles of radio waves that go out. But it could be an eye looking down at a needle point type pyramid, basically. This concept of linear time is what is driving it. This is why, again, why I call myself a conspiracy philosopher, as opposed to merely, and I'll talk about the details of conspiracy theory any day, because you have to know them and learn them before you can, I think, before you can start to philosophize about the larger shape of reality itself, essentially. But this eye, this pulsing concept of something that rises above and something that we as human beings always strive for, is what drives, what maintains the very motion of linear time, basically. So that's a pretty big head trip, but I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Well, I was just thinking about the news in general, and we had a really fantastic show yesterday, with Anthony Peake and Tom Campbell. One of the best shows we've ever done. And then we sat down and we watched the news. And it's somebody was murdered. So they found a body, or there was a car crash or something like that. You know, two things occurred to me. Number one, the things that we talked about on this show were really, really interesting. The things that I talk about in the news, freaking boring by comparison.
Yeah.
The things that we talk about on this show, they require an intellectual capacity in order to comprehend them and maybe even to malleate them into your life or something of that nature. The news, on the other hand, is just sitting back and watching things pass you by. And it occurs to me that this is actually better news, even though we're not even reporting news.
Oh, I would agree. And of course, I find most of my serious news, like you do, on the internet, and for coming from independent sources, basically. People talking about things that, and you can almost tell the one thing that ties all of these independent thinkers together is that they have a question. They have a question about what's going on and how and why. And the story that they are being fed perpetually just doesn't make sense to them. It's very interesting, like, for instance, in terms of general conspiracy theory, that I'm sure you're... Are you familiar with the Millennium Bug problem?
You mean Y2K?
Yeah, Y2K, yes. Of course you are. So you know Y2K. And you know that this whole concept was going to be that when the computers hit the millennium... They called it the Millennium Bug in the news. So what they were doing was they were reinforcing the concept. They were reinforcing to us the idea that the millennium was in the year 2000. But that's actually not true. The millennium began in 2001 because the first year on the calendar is marked year one, not year zero, basically. It's actually different than a human being, where our first birthday is one full year from the time we're born. So we're actually born at zero. But the calendars start at year one. They count the first day as the first moment of year one. So that means that the millennium doesn't turn over until 2001. And, of course, it's in 2001 that we have a couple of things happening simultaneously that are very important. So one of them is that Internet and mobile communication are becoming very common. Almost everyone in the Western world has a cell phone and has access to a computer, basically. And then the other event is, of course, 9-1-1, so which is the millennium event, the 2001 space leap into a new paradigm, essentially. And I think 9-1-1 is the moment in human history when you can start to separate two types of people, the people who are just going to try and really understand, really want to know what happened, and then those that just, to put it mildly, cannot handle the truth, essentially. And so they did, and the news that we receive from the mainstream media is a kind of a tennis match that's taking place, and it's one ace after another. People just continue to eat up whatever they're told on the news, basically. And then there's this alternative group, and as I said, we have this thing that ties us together no matter what we actually believe. And this is something that philosophically that I think is really important for people who look into this to understand, because you're going to deal with difficulties where you don't actually agree with other people who are also trying to find the truth, right? And yeah. This can cause schisms, but this is the one thing that we, as a group, need to remember, is that we all share this desire to know the truth, and that can help us put aside our differences and really start to answer very, very big questions. And you can see this happening on the political level, on the social level, and where I am most interested, on the philosophical level. So that's how I kind of see conspiracy theory in general and what it means, and how the modern news is actually... It's there. It's almost like a wall challenging us to climb it, basically, saying,
What I find interesting is that the alternative media, rather than attacking the mainstream media, will instead attack each other. And even after learning that divide and conquer is a tactic being used by the enemy to destroy us, and they still use it against each other, it's stupid.
Well, sure, and you can... Okay, I can explain why this is happening, basically, It's happening because our systems of law, our systems of social structure are wearing out. Because political structure and global economic structure is very much like a machine. It works like a machine, and it has a lifespan like a machine. And the economic and global social structure that has been holding our history together for the last 2,000 years is coming to an end, basically. And this, of course, corresponds exactly, for those people who are interested in the occult, with the passages of certain zodiacs. We're coming out of the age of Pisces, which is the age of law, interestingly enough. The lawgivers, such as the family leading down from Abraham through the kings of the Bible and up to Christ, whether or not they're mythical doesn't really matter, because we continually refer back to these books and these concepts for the laws around which we form our own social behavior. And you can see how every one of these laws is now being challenged on a day-to-day basis somewhere, and on every level of the microcosm, like within families or within larger or community local structures, and then the farther you go up, all the way to the global level, these laws are starting to break down, just like the pieces of a machine. You know, you can drive a car so long, and then sooner or later, that car is just not going to work anymore. It's going to have to be completely overhauled, and that's what's actually done, is that an overhaul is taking place. And that overhaul forces a dialogue where there hasn't been one before. And this is what's happening between you and me at this moment, is our conversation and the conversations that you have with your other guests we're pushing the dialogue to a limit, essentially. We're persistently at... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that this dialogue has just reached its limit because we're about to go into a commercial break.
Okay.
You know, isn't it lovely when that happens? Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Mark LeClaire. What was the website again? The Strange Wizard or something like that?
I call myself the Wrong Way Wizard, basically.
The Wrong Way Wizard. Okay, yeah. That's excellent. As opposed to the One Way Street Wizard. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know?
Because it's Wednesday.
And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV.
Welcome back.
You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're
not. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's business time every day, even on Wednesday. My very special guest is Mark LeClaire from wrongwaywizard.blogspot.com, is it? Or .ca or something?
Yeah, you got it. But I'm number one on Google, so if you just Google the Wrong Way Wizard, I'll come up there.
Yeah. I mean, because I doubt that many other people have chosen to identify themselves as a wizard that's going in the wrong way. You know, like a lot
of
people.
Well, actually, no, that's not true.
Really?
There are... wizardry in terms of the occult is has to do with motion, like you perform certain functions in a certain direction. And ever since I was a kid, I've had this tendency of doing things backwards. For instance, I always pick up and read the last part of a book first, and then I usually read through the chapters backwards. Now, I don't do this with novels, but if I'm reading a book about something technical, I always read the last chapter first, and it has to do with the fact that I'm also left-handed, so which is a wrong way sort of thing. But that's just a nickname anyway. So it's been a successful title for me. In the blog world, I'm fairly well known. Wizard.
Is there a right way wizard? A no way wizard? A Yahweh wizard?
You're a witty young man.
I'll take that as a no. All right.
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Okay.
You have to admit there's something of a ring to the Wrong Way Wizard.
It is. It's www.thewrongwaywizard, yeah. You know, worldwide web wrongwaywizard.blogspot.com. Exactly.
Yeah. Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Hmm. Okay. I get it. It's fabulous.
But as the Wrong Way Wizard, I write about media and understanding codes in media. I would essentially call the work that I do as a writer at the Wrong Way Wizard, I would call code breaking, basically. Trying to understand the meaning of hidden codes and what, and they turn out to be quite interesting. I mean, it's fairly obvious to me. Go ahead.
WWW with the MMM, so it's the Wrong Way Wizard decoding the mainstream media manipulation.
I like it. Yes, that's very good. Exactly. You can flip it over, and it does. That's what I do for the most part at my blog. Is I look at events in the light of the fact that we're being programmed, essentially, and that's exactly what, you know, people sit down to watch a TV program, but they never think to themselves, "Geez, I'm being programmed right now." And I think that the modern attitude towards media, it's used very much in a mercantile or a consumerism type of fashion. Well, even when people go to the movies, what they're doing is they're experiencing the movie as a consumer. They're looking for the products that they might like to buy. They're looking for the cool guy and the things that he does. And I had a friend recently point out to me that there's been a new drink called the James Bond or called the 007 that was minted after the success of the recent Skyfall movie. And, of course, it contains Sky vodka, right? So you have this idea of, and this is what I think we're doing with the media, is we're buying our personalities to a large degree. We say, hey, there's something that I like. I like what that guy said in this movie. I think I'll cop that kind of attitude. The ability to think or to make decisions based upon our environment has become completely flooded, essentially, with media imagery. If you live anywhere in an urban area, pretty much everywhere you go, you're looking at some kind of advertisement for something or another. And these advertisements are carefully put together by incredibly smart people. And the funny thing is that they openly acknowledge that they're manipulating. And yet each of us somehow seems to think that we're immune to that manipulation or that we're in on it. And nowadays, that's become part of the joke, right? This is why you have all these pop stars flashing Illuminati type signs, exactly. I mean, it's almost a laugh now. You're almost totally blind if you don't see it, basically.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I think my girlfriend was drinking Coke Zero, out of the belief that it wouldn't be as bad for her as normal Coke. I was like, baby, it's got artificial sweeteners, which is a hell of a lot worse than the normal sugar that they put in the Coke anyway, even though it's a level 6 biotoxin when the liquid comes off the frickin' ship and they water it down with municipal drinking water and sell it to you and brand it as the real thing. You think they're telling the truth now, all of a sudden?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You're right on the money. If you think about Coke and Pepsi, which are the two major colas in the United States, both of those words are terms that are used in the metal smelting industry. Coke and Pepsi are actually byproducts of making steel. So we're talking about molten metal here, and of course, which brings up the idea of hell as well. And of course, people tend to, and I mean, it's funny, but these drinks are actually invented so that you'll belch when you drink them, essentially. So you're becoming a voice from your own bowels right up through your mouth when you drink a Coke. And you belch naturally because it's almost like it's hidden in the names of the products themselves. It's something about the concept of a byproduct produced by something boiling in your stomach, essentially, which it's a fascinating connection to the idea of the top and the bottom, right? Because the bubbles go up. They're uplifting. They uplift you. They're the real thing, or they say Schwepp of essence, and they give you joie de vivre. But really, it's something taking place deep down in your stomach, essentially. So you have this. That's an occult concept, and it's a balanced concept because it sells what's at the top and what's at the bottom at the same time. So in a sense, you know, you're selling your soul every time you drink a Coke. You've earned your income, your pay, your work as a slave, and now you're paying it back to the master, basically, who sits on his dark throne at the bottom of your existence, essentially, in the bowels of the earth.
It's very similar to people smuggling, how they'll bring a prostitute into New York from Srebrenica or Russia or somewhere.
Yes.
And they put them in a little room, and they say, okay, well, now that we've got you here, you owe us for getting you here, so you've got
that's
to
right.
work.
Well, that's,
you've got
that's,
to have sex with all of these people.
The whole system of, we are born into this world owing already, right, because we are our cost. When we come into the world, we're a cost. Instantly, money has to be shelled out for our existence, right? So our parents and our parents' parents, they've all had to do this, and it's an endless chain. And when you study, and again, this goes into the concept of conspiracy philosophy, basically. When you do this, when you look at this chain, well, actually, let me digress here a little bit. Are you familiar with Robert Anton Wilson?
No.
You're not. No, well, he's a fairly famous American writer about the occult, and he tells an interesting story. I mention his name. He's worth Googling, Robert Anton Wilson, for any of your listeners out there. There's lots of stuff on the net about him, but the reason I mention his name is just because the story that I'm going to tell you is something that I heard him say, essentially, and it's about the concept of meditation. You know, when you, if you want to. You want to just, and this is an exercise that I highly recommend to any of your listeners, is to just, you know, sit in one place, somewhere you feel quiet and comfortable, and try to figure out how you got there, basically. Try and figure out what it was, what forces brought you to the point that you are there sitting in that chair at that moment. Now, what you inevitably end up doing is you learn to meditate upon the concept of infinite regression. How there's always something that happened before, and then something that happened before. And then if you do this successfully enough, you reach a certain point, and that point is a kind of a zero point. And this is an act of meditation. This isn't like you don't hum or you don't chant. You just try and think of how you got to where you are. And you keep thinking back as far as you can, and you may have to extrapolate ideas like, okay, my parents came from here and they met here, and then you have to go back to before your parents and you have to try and figure out where you might have come from. And pretty soon, you're going to start to realize that you can always trace yourself back further, one more step. But there is a certain place, and this is the so-called zero point or the singularity, where there's nowhere further. And then you're confronting the concept essentially of what I will call a central principle. But other people would call it God, essentially. And this is where we get the idea of the eye of the eye on top of the pyramid, is that the concept of the human social engine, and that social engine, it drives our politics, it drives the way we handle our personal relationships, it's a concept of futurism, essentially, of the so-called better tomorrow. Go ahead.
I've actually had this experience. My mother paid for me to go to this course called an Avatar course, I think it was, where
okay.
you pay a substantial amount of money. And what they did is they just sat there and they ask you questions about yourself, and they just repeatedly ask you the same question until you
yes.
do that regression. And then you suddenly have this profound realization.
That's
and you come out of the place actually really feeling high off your tits. It's ridiculous, you know, how good having these realizations can make you feel.
Well, you reach a point very close to the center of all questions when you do this successfully. And, you know, it's funny that you mention that, because that's actually a Scientology technique.
Yeah.
Yeah, that technique is used in Scientology, basically.
Which is why I didn't go back to another single course.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Scientology is they're correct. But you don't have to pay, and you don't have to go through hell to figure out all. You know, L. Ron Hubbard was a fiction writer. But he was also very knowledgeable in the occult, and he knew enough about the reality of nature itself to construct an allegory that actually makes sense up against some serious scrutiny. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I was wondering to that friend, how did I end up being the way I am? Like, why am I attracted to the things that I'm attracted to? Why do I like some things and not like others? Because there's things that I don't like that people do like. And there's attitudes that people have that I can't share with them, basically. And I'm wondering to myself, how did I come to be this thing that I am, essentially? And that is a concept that drives you back to the center, essentially. So that form of a meditation, and it's funny because this is the first knowledge lecture that's given in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. The first knowledge is you basically try to think about nothing, or you try to meditate upon a point in space. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because this concept is at the center of my work, and I'm going to give you another plug right now, since I know you don't mind them. I was recently published in a book called The Sync Book 2. It's the second volume of an anthology of stories about synchronicity by different authors. This is the second book, and there's 26 different authors in the book. I'm just one of them. But in there, I write about my main thesis of the holographic matrix. So for people who are, of course, detail is involved, but the idea is to identify both the center of reality and the extreme limit of reality at the same time. What is the exact center point of everything, and what is the limit of everything? And for those, just to tease those who might be interested in reading that, I have identified that center and that limit as the moon, essentially. The moon is the extreme limit of human aspiring. Everything that's happening in our dimensional reality has to do with the moon and the influences of the moon. So for readers who are interested in that sort of thing, they should definitely check out the Sync Book too.
Well, the moon has an incredible effect. You talk to any paramedic or police officer, and you say, what night is the worst night to do night shift?
Well, the full moon theory has been studied statistically, and it seems to still hold some water, that there is much more activity.
Well,
and this is what... Go ahead.
Speaking of holding water, the moon's what draws the tides, right? And people forget that we're like, between 70 or 90% water? And so the way it affects the tides on the Earth is actually the way it affects the fluids in your brain as well,
to a certain extent. You know? I mean, there's an experiment that anybody can do. It works really well if you're a smoker. I chop up my tobacco in a little, because I smoke a pipe, I chop up my tobacco into a fine grain, but you can do this with leaves or any kind of dry or reasonably dry substance. If you put it into a shot glass, like a tall narrow one like this, if you put it into a shot glass and you leave it overnight, when you come back the next day, it's going to be compressed, basically, and because the force of gravity will actually pull down. If you put a little bit of dirt in your plant, gravity is actually pulling that down, pressing it deeper into the pot, basically. And this is the thing about the human beings. I tend to forget when they're thinking about concepts like free will and how things happen, basically, is that, you know, I like to say this. There's only really one law, and that law is gravity. And all other laws are built around that idea, basically. And so, and ironically, in terms of this meditation that I recommended, this is what gravity does. It pulls you towards the center of something, essentially. And I know that you've talked to people. You're familiar with Marco Rodin and his Rodin coil?
No. Now we're going to have to Rodin onto a commercial break here. Very special guest. The Wrong Way Wizard .blogspot.com is Mark LeClaire, and we'll be right back in a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere, and don't you get sucked out of your room by a lunar pool of some kind. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, my very special guest. Final segment here. We only got like 12 minutes left with Mark LeClaire. The www. Is it The Wrong Way Wizard or just Wrong Way Wizard?
The Wrong Way Wizard, yeah.
But
the URL is just Wrong Way Wizard, though. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has an Asian counterpart called The Wong Way Wizard.
That's my neighbor to the east.
Yeah. Right. Speaking of which, I mean, thinking about this concept of East versus West and different cultural different, you know, things that really they blend between the cultures, like the concept of eating food, for example, around a table full of people. Big thing, pretty much everywhere you go, and I think it's something that really brings people together is the ritual consumption of food. Something I was thinking about a couple of days ago was there was a study conducted upon people who say grace before they eat their meal, and it turns out that when you do that, when you bless your food, your body actually absorbs a higher quantity of nutrition from it.
That is,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, the concept of, I mean, prayer is positive self-affirmation, essentially. So one could assume, from the strictly, I guess you could say, the scientific point, that your belief, your faith, gives you a sense of health that others do not have, and that idea is the whole foundation of Christian Science, basically. But as the Wrong Way Wizard, I'm very skeptical of the concept of health at all, essentially, because inevitably the body breaks down. This is the whole point about the problem of life itself, and this turns out to be, you know, you mentioned food and sitting around a table being something that ties us all together. Well, this is actually agriculture that is tying us together. The concept of being at a table And by agriculture, I mean the husbandry of both animals and of the land, basically. This is I'm a fairly in-depth analyst of the films of Stanley Kubrick. And this is the message of the first part of the film, the one with the monkeys. They don't eat together. They don't share food in the same way that they do after they first kill an animal and after they, at that point, also map out a territory for themselves. And so this is what the dinner table represents in the microcosm, essentially, is the other end of that. And it's interestingly enough that that is a law. It is law that holds that concept together, the concept of authority. And I think we're seeing, we're looking at some kind of change that's taking place right now, because this system of agriculture, of individual families, is breaking down, and it's being broken down by, again, what appears to be some kind of consensus at a very high level that this sort of change is needed, and the new man sits at the table of the family of man, and that's sort of what I'm doing with you now, because this conversation is also a direct result of that original organization of things, and you and I are speaking in a sense at its limit. And there's an irony about that, because we're the farthest away that we could possibly be. You're on the other side of the world from me right now, basically. And yet here we are sitting at the same table talking to each other, basically, and sharing the sorts of communion. And this is the whole idea. When thinking, and for me, again, being a philosopher of conspiracy means that you have to see things the way they really are. That's your ultimate goal. It's not necessarily, it can be an activist sort of thing, but in my case, it's not. When I look into the mysteries of, say, 9/11 or who shot JFK, I'm not really looking to find a guilty party. I'm looking to find why these particular stories happen the way they do, and to take it as far as I can up the chain. And this is what we have now, is this concept of a new world is something that... See, I want to, because it poses a riddle, a paradox at the top, because we wouldn't be communicating without this new world order, and yet, in a sense, we have some trouble with it. And I believe the reason for that is, well, go ahead.
Well, my concept is the physics paradigm is that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So you can't seek to enslave humanity with a apparatus without a contrary apparatus and a reaction from humanity that rises above to take it out. Kind of much the same way that white blood cells
now,
work.
Now you sound like Karl Marx. Because
really?
That's exactly what Karl Marx said, that the state of oppression would formulate so much pressure from the lower classes that they would, and this is what he meant by revolution, they would topple the top, and they would go over the top themselves, essentially. So this is a process of time, interestingly enough, if you want to see it in the really wacky sense, as the turning over of an hourglass, basically. So it appears that with the passing of a certain period of time, the hourglass of history becomes empty. And we have, in a sense, in this way, philosophically, 9/11 is the end of history. History is over at that point, because the study of history is related directly into that event. It all pours back to a central point, basically. So pretty much everything that can be said about history has been said. You just have to know where to find it. And where is that place for most people? To the Internet. and this is what you find, say, for instance, with Quentin Tarantino's very clever last two films, both of which tell a story about history that is considered false. He is rewriting history. History is being rewritten as we speak, essentially. A new history is being formed, a new concept that will last, that will formulate. It's really about the machine itself breaking down, essentially. There's no question about that. The question is it a real revolution, or is it what I call an amnesiac revolution, which comes out of, and I know that you spoke to Anthony Peake yesterday. I'm sure he mentioned Philip K. Dick at length. And Dick had this idea that we go into a new state of amnesia, basically, and that we've all been here before. We've all done this hundreds, if not thousands, of times before, and now we're doing it again, and we're going to. The revolution is not a true revolution. It's a form of amnesia where we go over the top of a curve, basically. So it's an interesting question.
I remember seeing this movie where a guy was saying he was making up some kind of story about somebody, and that they married a person who was half American, half Polynesian. They're an amnesian.
You are a prankster, young man. yeah, that's funny. Well, and...
I wonder if Karl Marx had did Karl Marx have a sense of humor, or was he just really serious about his Freemasonic garb and putting his hand in his belly with the hidden hand type stuff?
There's no question he was a serious guy. Most of the people around that time didn't have much of a sense of humor, not in their writing anyway. Well, it's easier for us to do it now because we're after the wave has already crashed, basically. You know, it's funny because I was chastising you for that joke, but it actually proves my point, essentially, because if America is Polynesia, that's literally the point where East meets West. It's where the wave of history and of time has come all the way around from where the sun rises in the East, and it's catching up to itself in the West, and it's lost its memory, essentially, by the time it gets all the way over there. So, and that's a very important part of my theory. In regards to the toroid shape of the universe, essentially, is that we're always chasing our own tail around the surface of a giant donut, essentially.
Yeah. And people forget that the word revolution means to go in a circle?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. It does. And the wheel is not touching the ground, basically. The Buddhists know this. They have their spinning wheels that they have, and they're attached to the side of a wall. And they come by and spin the wheel, but the wheel turns, but it doesn't go anywhere, essentially. So you could say, in the lighthearted sense, wherever you go, there you are. You know, and that's and this becomes, I think, the pinnacle of conspiracy philosophy, basically, is whether you yourself, as a person, are actually real. Right? What is the nature of the reality of who you are? The individual... If the individual exists at all, then there is no more important question than that. So I'm sitting here, Mark LeClaire, and you're halfway across the world, Vinnie Eastwood. And the question is, are we real? Am I real? Are you real? And if your answer to that question is yes, that means that the universe is a lot more complicated place than we thought it was, basically. And possibly more simple, too, because there is a connection between you and me. And yet we are different. We are supposedly have our own free will.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure whether I'm real, because it would be very difficult to prove one way or the other, rather like trying to prove the existence of God or prove the non-existence of God. It's like you can't prove a negative. What I do feel rings true is that I am having a subjective experience, and it feels very real. And when I do things, they have what appear to be real consequences. You know, if I have a fun conversation, I feel better.
Yes. Okay. All right. So now you're talking about that's a very, believe it or not, that's very primitive intellectually, because you're basically talking about the pursuit of basic comfort, essentially, right? I mean, to simplify what you're saying, you want to do the things that make you feel better and not do the things that make you feel worse, and that actually makes a lot of sense. But the funny thing is that it actually proves the theory of the pyramid, the pyramidical shape of our social structure, because it also proves something we talked about earlier, that people don't give up power, basically, because at the very at the center of it, one's power is the ability to make oneself feel comfortable, to not be bored, to be able to have certain types of freedom, essentially.
We've kind of come to the end of the show here. I'll say this. There really is nothing new under the sun, ladies and gentlemen. Everything that we could do today has probably already been done, already been thought of, already been constructed. And, you know, there's an illusion of creativity, an illusion of spontaneity. And I think, really, you just got to enjoy the ride. Mark LeClaire, thank you very much for your time. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness and dark occulted mysticism-worshipping scum, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. A very special guest for this hour is Josh Toms, I believe. Josh, welcome to the program.
Yes, you pronounced it correctly. I live here in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm an artist, inventor, visionary, and it's a long story how I got there. It's not really about me. What's going on is I'm in touch with a lot of these inventors, and these people have brilliant knowledge, great experiments to offer, and I decided through my artistic interpretations of what I was learning from these people and seeing the cultural development going on throughout each of the countries. I mean, it's going on in England, New Zealand, where you're at. America is starting to get there. So I decided to pull together a movement called the Million Volt March. It is backed by the Tesla Science Foundation, and on Tesla's birthday, we will be marching on the Liberty Bell in Pennsylvania, to declare that there is a energy servitude. We have been shackled into this culture of parasitic technologies, and it's really sad to see that Tesla's vision was never really achieved, and we're still fighting to even, you know, accept some of the things he said. People don't believe half of what he said, but we utilize his technology all over.
Yeah. So anybody else out there using alternating current currently?
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody? Wait exactly. A second. Didn't that get totally demonized by, what was his name, Thomas Edison or something like that? He invented non-alternating current, and he said that alternating current would blow everybody up. He actually, like, electrocuted a cow or something in front of a big crowd of people and killed it.
Yeah, it was an elephant. And there's actually...
Even worse.
Yeah, you know, that's old political PR stunts. But, yeah, every time you flip on a switch, you can say, that is Tesla technology. There you go. And the Smithsonian said that Tesla did invent the radio. So Marconi just took his patents and built this radio, which Tesla really didn't care in those times because he wanted people to develop. He wanted the upliftment of mankind. It wasn't about him. It was about this idea, this spreading throughout the culture of a singularity of the Vitruvian man, how we're all a fractal reflection of this structural matrix hologram. It's the Great Pyramid.
Maybe so, Tesla was positively naive to think that because he's trying to help people, because he's trying to advance mankind, that everybody would just suddenly get it and get on board. And he didn't realize maybe that there are really psychopathic, sociopathic, scumbaggery individuals out there who have no interest in people living a free and happy life, and instead have no creativity either. So just steal his ideas and pretend that they're their own.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, J.P. Morgan bankrupt Tesla and caused the Wardenclyffe Tower, which was going to broadcast wireless electricity throughout the world free to humanity. He bankrupted it. Well, around the same time, you know, the Federal Reserve was getting gone. Well, everyone has an alternative motive. So it's pretty startling. The one thing that startles me the most is a place in Homestead, Florida called Coral Castle. Have you ever heard of it?
No, not at all.
Okay, this thing's going to blow your mind. This thing is a way to wake up the masses, the people that really don't care about stuff, because it is incredible. And what is so incredible about it is that it was built by one man, an immigrant from Latvia. You can find the story online about his life, but he built this castle all by himself in Homestead, Florida, in the 30s and the 40s. He actually moved it at one point, and the heaviest stone is 32 tons. He did it by himself. And there's an, I'm not sure, I'm not the most technical person on this, the exact details. I'm more involved with the technological side of magnets and that kind of research, but it was a 9-ton gate or 11-ton, and it's perfectly balanced, and a little girl can push this thing. And it's incredible. If you check it out, you'll be... It shocked me. And he had a magnetic motor there. So, you know, I've been involved with trying to understand the universe because I've had some hard situations in life that I've had to grow through and develop into an understanding of what really is going on. It's too hard to understand. I'm just humbled by the experience at this point. But
I found that understanding is something that you only ever think you have until you reach another point. It's kind of like what they call Russian dolls, you know? There's a big understanding, and underneath that there's a smaller one and a smaller one and a smaller one, but it's kind of like infinite, sort of like the fractal universe theory. I'm sure you heard of that.
Let's get this picture for you. I know people may not be able to see this, but that's the Vitruvian man on a fractal level, and that's what the Coral Castle guy left, was the dimensions of the Great Pyramid of Giza, and he also left some books with one of the most important symbols ever. If you pay attention to that symbol, the chalice, magnetic current. So his book is experiments. That's all it is. And it involves the Fibonacci sequence.
Hey, Josh, I'm sorry, there's some kind of a smoke alarm going off next to me, so just keep talking to the audience. I'm going to go check it out while you're talking.
Okay. And the magnetic current is just a bunch of experiments to show very subtle details of how energy is moving over a wire or through a magnetic metal that's been magnetized. I still don't understand this entire book. I'm learning from people, and It's only 19 pages. There's a man.
It's an incredibly small book, so not understand, you know.
Yeah, it is very complicated, and it's very simple too. Once you see it, so that's the thing. It's complexity and simplicity. That's what the universe is. It's the union of opposites. And right here, you can see that's a sphere. There's no actual straight lines on there. I've actually cubed a sphere. It's what's going on with Ed's work is he's showing the structure of the universe is magnets. And a guy out of Australia named Scott Lang has actually written a book. He hasn't published it yet, but he has done every experiment in this book. There's also a man out, he used to live in Florida, but now he's here in Denver. I met him recently. His name is John DePue. John DePue has done some incredible work involving Coral Castle. He created a thing called the Equilibrious Grid, where it distributes magnetic energy across an interface. It's incredible. I still don't understand all of... I mean, he hasn't shared everything either because he's concerned we might misuse this technology. There's so many different avenues. The connections... everything is connected in this, and I found that each one of these independent researchers have similar aspects. They may not have the full three-dimensional view of it, but they're all connecting on different lattices. And it's just incredible.
Well, sorry. When you say they're connecting on different lattices, what is a lattice? Is that a type of vegetable?
A lattice is like a spider web.
Ah.
A bunch of strands. It's like string theory, but I don't like the connotation of string theory. But it is a hologram, and that's but it's not empty like science is saying. It's full of energy and it's full of information, and that is the matrix, this informational field. And it's magnets.
David Eichmann says in one of his lectures that I went to that it's plasma. Like, everything's pretty much plasma. It's all energy.
John DePue has a website called magneticspectrum.com. You go there, there's a video, and that's it. But he says that it's like a spectrum of magnetism. So what's, you know, the Pink Floyd, the white light, and then it separates into the colors. It's like the Pythagorean triangle, the 3-4-5, just very simple math. That's what these guys are doing. John Searle, he goes into the magic squares in his work. It's these, and then Marco Rodin goes into a very simple circle with 9 digits, and it makes this perfect torus. I've actually got a Rodin coil right here.
Mm-hmm. It looks tasty.
Here's another one.
Oh, yeah. So,
these are just different technological things that are going on. And this movement is to try and uplift each of these individuals to come together and kind of put their egos aside, because we all have our own little views on things. I mean, no one's right. We're all going to be wrong one day, too, because Ed puts it perfectly. Every book becomes outdated. And then those books become outdated.
Yeah.
So,
well, what's interesting is that everything's kind of like a reinvention of itself over and over again. Yet, despite the fact that we don't know that notice that there's anything new, somebody's already done it beforehand, right? But we keep coming up with these new discoveries. And then the new discovery after that is to discover that somebody knew about this discovery before we discovered it.
Right, exactly. That's what the car has turned into. They've just fancified each individual component. They haven't turned the components around at all to see if they work in a different wiring. And that's what Ed actually did, was he took apart old Model T Ford parts and he put the electrical system back together, built this magnet wheel, stacked these magnets five high. They used to just have one stack in the Model T. He took five of these things. It's a beautiful wheel. When you look at it, you see the geometry, and it actually has a four-leaf clover in the middle of iron. It's very interesting. I get lost sometimes. There are so many different avenues with this. John Hutchison. Have you ever heard of John Hutchison?
It rings a very large bell. I don't know why.
John Hutchison did this thing called the Hutchison effect, where he used Tesla coils and caused things to lift up and levitate.
Oh, yeah. I remember somebody was telling me a story. He went out to the desert with John Hutchison and a bunch of other inventors, and he would levitate. He had like a file, you know, like those horse files kind of thing, or you file away the hoofs, and he managed to levitate one of those and break it in three, and then put it back together, and then drop again. And then he'd levitate it again, make it go white hot, and then as soon as it would drop, he'd pick it up with his bare hands and not be burned. It was like really amazing technology.
Yep, and that's messing with the molecular levels of these metals. All metal, I mean, there's different types of metal. There's and how it is affected with energy, but I kind of see certain metals as like an antenna. So when you get it's just sitting there, it'll pick up energy just sitting in the air. That's what an element does. They pick up, that's why it would oxidize, because it's picking up the energy in the air. So this movement, we're going to get all these inventors, anyone that wants to come just to bring the community together of entrepreneurs and start a new renaissance, because that is what this world needs, and especially America right now, because there's so many people that are out of jobs. It's getting pretty insane how our banking system has completely screwed the planet. I mean, this is where, unfortunately, this is kind of where things are going to have to change, and it's going to be on the inside of this country. Every day when I go to work, I see NORAD. I live in Colorado Springs. So a little bit of background on me. I built circuit boards for 4.5 years. So I got very electrical and technical. And now I'm running a CNC machine cutting granite countertops. So I understand Ed's stone cutting abilities and how hard it would have actually been. It's kind of weird how I ended up into those two avenues of professions. But of course, I've been working on my own magnetic generator. This generator has been an inspiration based off of all these different people's work. So I haven't actually shared it, because some of it is private information with other people. It's kind of becoming a glob of other people's work. So I'm not entirely sure if it's mine or if it's theirs, but one of these days I'm just going to share it. And it's just taking a car battery and utilizing the magnets more efficiently so that it'll last longer. And that's one avenue we can go down is batteries, because John Bedini is another inventor. John Bedini has a circuit. You can take one battery, pulse this magnet wheel, charge two batteries. The guy has been told not to sell his devices, so he's turned to just research and development up in Montana. But why are these people just going to the wayside?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty obvious. When in a country where everybody's out of work, and if you're out of work, you're out of food, anybody who can provide free energy means you don't need that country and its government and its military-industrial complex anymore, and nobody gives up their power. We'll be right back after the break with Josh Toms, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes.
Look at me, driving, and I won't stop. cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about sending people to prison just because I don't like them. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. There's actually only really one rule on this show that's imposed on us by the network, and that's to have fun. And the other rules that are imposed on us are by the FCC, the effing FCC that I like to call them, who I like to often say F you to. My very special guest is Josh Toms. We were speaking over the break about how it doesn't matter how many devices you come up with to save you time, there's just never enough hours in the frickin' day. Now, and I always wondered why the hell this was. And his interests involve magnets and all of these other kind of things. And I was wondering, do you know, it'd be interesting to see if you could use a magnetic field to bend time so that you could, I don't know, make some kind of a capsule. Jump inside there, freeze time as it were, get all your work done for the day, and then come out and the day's only just began, and then you can get on with your life? That'd be cool.
Well, John DePew says that there's a third force in the universe, the positive and the negative magnets, and then the neutral particles of matter that separate matter existence. So that force actually can split time and space. It is the middle. It is the in between. It is the hologram, the spider web of it all. Everything is connected to it. So that takes us to superconductivity. Superconductivity is exotic inventions or exotic materials that have a high Gauss energy, which is just energy. The technical term isn't important. But it can actually be so conductive, that means it's picking the energy like an antenna, that it can sense the twinkling of stars they're finding on some of these nano superconductors. And that could be researched through David Hudson's work. Each one of these names I'm giving you tonight, you're going to have to research. It's too deep to get into in an hour. So these superconductors, the United States Defense Department classes them as national security if you want to patent one of these things and build it. So isn't that a catch-22? What if we want free energy, but to have free energy, you have to have one of these superconducting machines? Makes sense to me. Let's make it illegal to patent. So that means there is no free enterprise. These people's machines are going to the wayside. Ed of Coral Castle made a patent, and he actually put in his book, "Don't build my machine because I have a patent in the patent office." This is in 1945. There's no records of it. You can't find it. There's no evidence of this patent. That 32-ton stone, I don't know exactly the year he lifted it, 1/5 the weight of the Saturn V rocket that took us to the moon. One man. Yeah. So we live in a very strange world. You know, we have a great pyramid that people think we drug logs and had a bunch of slaves and put this into perfect geometric order. I mean, just to cut the red granite inside the king's chamber, I'm sorry, you can't do it with copper unless they had some sort of exotic tool like Ed, who obviously in his public addresses said, "I have the secret of the Great Pyramid of Giza." So maybe we should take his claim.
I was watching a travel show one time, and this woman who was hosting the travel show was, you know, going down the Nile with this man. And she asked him, how did the pyramids get built? And he told her, well, in our oral traditions, it says we use the wand. You know, you would just tap the stone and it would levitate, and you could just walk it along the river, just giving it a nudge every now and again. You know, really amazing. And this is part of the oral tradition that's been passed down through to generations over thousands of years, and the story hasn't changed. And yet, I think it's in the modern era where you know what reductionism is, right? Of course. And I think basically people, they refuse to believe that magic and technology are basically the same thing. And so they try to eliminate any mention of advanced technology from the ancient world in order to make people think that it was just, oh, it was just so simple, you know. It was obviously just copious quantities of slaves that dragged these 100-ton stones that even the most advanced frickin' cranes in the modern world can't even frickin' lift, you know. And people don't investigate into it. People don't know about the Graham Hancock and his work on the pyramids, and even the Sphinx, okay? The Sphinx is huge, and it's a singular stone that is not from there. It is not physically possible, not technologically possible, in this day and age, with conventional technology that we have here, to do that. And it's not a question of, oh, it must be magic, or how did they do that? It's just that technology is magical to those who don't understand it.
Superconductors, these nano superconductors I was talking about. One of the experiments that was going on when the guy was trying to patent this substance, the government wanted to know what it weighed, because, you know, there's all these, you know, these set things that they have to know. He couldn't weigh it, because when you cooled it off, it weighed more than what the original sample was. And if you heated it up, it would eventually become invisible, and it caused the Petri dish to weigh less than the scale. It would go zero. So what if you had this white powder and you sprinkled it on a big stone? Could it just kind of lift up because it's a superconductor, and maybe it started repelling a magnetic field, which is what they say superconductors do, and the Earth has a magnetic field. So, you know, I think it's funny, when we built these rockets, we could have got, I mean, we may not been able to get the people back, but we've been able to get into space a lot easier with an electromagnet and a guy on a seat with a magnet. Just turn that thing on like a speaker. If it was big enough, he'd end up in space.
Yeah, more impressive a superconductor than the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. I was also thinking about this as well, is the classification of technologies under national security. And I defined national security meaning tyranny, and national being globalist, really. So in order to maintain globalist tyranny, they classify things under national security, right? And it occurs to me that if technology was freed in such a way, it would be impossible for them to maintain control, because everybody would suddenly have access to these kind of superior devices, and the jig would be up, as it were.
You know where this is really startling? Is with this magnet wheel that I've been working on, and from a lot of these people that I've looked into, it's very simple. We all can build these things. And the thing that's going to be really startling, and I see it coming, they're already talking about electromagnetic pulses. Well, to do this, you have to pulse DC electricity, because that's what Tesla in his later life found, was his AC was nice, but his fascination ended up being with the pulse DC energy and how that actually worked. Well, Coral Castle does the same thing. These people are connected. Walter Russell is connected to these two also, but I'm not going to go off onto that. This pulse DC is like a radio transmitter. It creates an energy field, and it pulses outwards, and you can collect it. So if our technology is outdated, and we're not building it based off of how energy naturally works, when you get this high energy like Niagara Falls, you can't just dam it up. You're going to have to put a little paddle wheel in it. Well, our technology tries to dam everything up, and that's why a laptop heats up so much. It's a waste of energy. Well, with this pulsing energy, it actually is going to cause these technological flaws to be inherent. So they are protecting the grid in a way, which we don't want to just collapse everything, but they're also using the grid as a way to also stop it as national security. So it's another catch. We've built this fake infrastructure based off of this electron view that clearly isn't right, because we haven't... What has Michio Kaku built? What great invention has Michio Kaku built? He's written books. These inventors, artists, I see them as, they take knowledge from nature and they implement it, they apply it. And that's far better than to theorize the universe. An artist observes the world. A physicist nowadays theorizes the world. But they shouldn't. They should base their world off of experimental data, by observational data, not equations. And I mean, I had a Stephen Hawking's book. I don't even know where that guy's at. It's incredible how we look to these people that are put up in front of us, and we forget the people that actually are putting something important out.
And we live an upside-down opposites world, really. The people who don't know nothing are touted as the geniuses, and the people who know really what's happening are touted as the crazy people.
There's a really startling artwork, piece of architecture in front of the Vatican of this giant pine cone. I'm sure you've seen it. You know, people say it's the pineal gland. Well, what they don't really notice is man is on the bottom of this chalice, and all of this is above him. Well, there is the magnetic current symbol on there blatantly all around this thing, and it's above us. It's like symbolically unachievable. Well, I say this is bull. I think the culture is coming together. We have people to look up to, the people that have sacrificed so much. And those are some of the names I've been saying. These people are really doing stuff out there. John DePew, John Searle, John Bedini, John, David Hudson, John Hutchison, Marco Rodin, Randy Powell, you'll have him on tomorrow. His work is really awesome with Daniel. There's so many great minds out there, but we need to come together and just put our egos aside. We don't know everything, and just uplift the people that matter. And the people that really matter are, I feel, these inventors right now, because they're the ones really able to affect change through true liberty, through true expressionism, through artistic, technological pun metaphors.
Well, see, they're capable of freeing people with a device that is very technical, whereas other people could never achieve freedom for humanity with any amount of pontification or philosophy.
Yeah, just look at what Tesla did. It isn't. I mean, we're 100 years later, we're still using it.
And did you see the YouTube video? I think Jay Leno was driving around in one of the new Tesla cars. You see that?
Yeah.
I thought that was extraordinary. You know, here you have, you know, mainstream comedian cruising around in a freaking Tesla car. And by the end of the video, it becomes apparent to him that simply by driving around and having the car charge itself going down hills, that he will return home with actually more fuel than he left home with.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's too bad that we're still where we're at. After the oil spill, after Fukushima, I mean Fukushima, my gosh, the amount of nuclear power plants in the United States, right in California too, where all the earthquakes are there.
I mean, come on, people. When are we going to learn? We need to come to this. This is what is frustrating the most for me, and that's why I'm starting this, because these inventors have the solutions. John Hutchison can reverse radiation effects. He went down to the oil spill and was broadcasting the natural frequencies across the water and was reducing the corexic and the oil in the water. But then the government came and scared him away. So what it is, the military industrial complex that is, and it's probably more deeper than that. The media is involved, the corporate conglomerate. I mean,
it's like Bill Hicks and George Carlin have been telling us through their comedy for years that there is a big club and they own everything. They own the media, they own the industry, they own the medicine, they own you, right? We are the very definition of livestock. Apparently, when we get issued a birth certificate, there's a tracking number on there, and you can check out that tracking number on the frickin' Wall Street Stock Exchange, and there you go. You'll find out how much you're worth. You are literally live stock on the stock market. We'll be right back after the break with Josh Toms at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and we'll respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino, I'm not Tina Tonga. We don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand?
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show today. My very special guest, Josh Toms. You can go to see his YouTube channel, youtube.com/JToms111. JToms111 is his YouTube name, and he's also on Facebook, I believe is the correct pronunciation, facebook.com/Josh.Toms.7. So that's Josh.Toms.7 on Facebook. Welcome back, mate. Now, is there any elements of your research that you've kind of delved into that's actually kind of really scared the bejesus out of you?
Dr. Judy Wood.
Mm-hmm.
John Hutchison and her come together. If you have free energy, couldn't you blow up a planet? Couldn't you make a Death Star? Is that crazy to say nowadays? But we actually have lasers that can, like a handheld laser that can burn through a ceramic cup. I mean, that's a death ray. Tesla talked about a death ray. He built that supposedly in the 30s. Well, you know, maybe there's a death ray out there. That's what concerns me, is the idea of direct energy weapons.
How exactly do they work? Are they capable of, I don't know, like using the natural energy that's in the atmosphere and just channeling it so that it goes?
It's a very technical question. It's a way to force energy into a tip. It's like a diode. You're wanting to force it into a channel. That's what a laser diode is. So you want to do like what a microwave does. You want to raise the voltage really high. You want to create a potential that like an antenna structure or a metal could pick it up. Or at a certain point, you would actually get down to the molecular energy structure where it's like a heat or a plasma. So it's not exactly that plasma where it's igniting, but it is exciting the energy bonds in the molecular structure. So it is like a microwave. You put a paper towel in a microwave, it won't cook. But if you put a wet paper towel in there, it'll cook. It's kind of it's a technical subject. It's the Star Wars project from the 80s that Reagan did. It's startling. I had I've always wondered what happened, and I feel Dr. Judy Wood's book is incredible, to say the least. This movement is about people that are trying to expose that we don't know everything, that when, like in a court case, when you're convicting somebody to go to prison, you want to get all the evidence before you make any decisions or any predeterminations. You don't want to put a guy that's innocent behind bars. You want to get the truth out there and find out, how did he die? Who, where, when? You know, all those details. We don't have those details on 9/11. And even the nanothermite stuff isn't there. I know this is, they're going to say, a radical view, and it might push people away from this movement, but it is the other side of free energy technology, is that we can do harm with it. And that's why John DePue, who I respect greatly, is not releasing a lot of his work, because are we ready for this too? I mean, this is a very deep kind of question we have to ask ourselves. We have to have it because of the situation we've put ourselves in. But are we capable of having it? It's one of those catch-22 things. Are we going to blow ourselves up again? I mean, we have to be really wholehearted with this and want to do good. And I feel that all of these inventors are wanting to do good. And those are the people we need to be looking up to. Tesla, even though Edison was kind of a crooked guy, he still had a vision. I mean, why are we looking up to people like Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber? These are just people put up in front of us that, you know, they're talented, they have their own rights, but are they actually determining our future? Are they affecting generations to come? Are they actually visionaries like Leonardo da Vinci, who clearly knows what the hell he was talking about with the Vitruvian Man, as blatant intellectual genius? It's incredible how we've gotten to the point where we are today.
Yeah, I think we've just got our priorities out of whack. And I went to this sort of dance party festival last weekend, filming it for a friend of mine who was organizing. And I was quite surprised to find out that I'm actually a celebrity in New Zealand now. You know, people were coming up to me, they knew who I was, and they were really happy to see me and that kind of thing. And even at the bar we went to afterwards for the after party, I still had people coming up to me, people I didn't recognize and never knew from a bar of soap, you know, that kind of thing. And I was thinking, man, that's actually people who've got their frickin' priorities correct, okay? They actually want to hear the truth. They actually want to do something that's right. And there were a whole bunch of other people, which I'm sad to say far outnumbered the people who knew who I was, who were vacuous, soulless, mindless morons who have nothing, really. They got nothing. They got a slave job, a slave mentality, and they love their slave society. And they ain't going to take this society anywhere good. They're only going to make it go down. They ain't going to push it up. And it's occurred to me throughout history that it has always been a small minority of people who get it, who really figure out what is important, that wind up changing the world for future generations. When you talk about waking up the masses, I kind of hold back from that, and I think to myself, can we ever point at any moment in history where the masses, meaning over 50% of the population, has actually ever made a positive difference? I don't think there is such an example that we can point to. Even positive revolutions like the American Revolution, who threw off the chains of the king, was fought by, what, 3% of the population? Tops? You know? The masses don't matter, and historically never have. And I think that's when we try to wake up the masses that we forget to work on doing the right thing. by doing the wrong thing, which is trying to wake up the masses. If you know what I mean, I'm not trying to say that people don't matter and they should be exterminated or anything like that. I'm just saying that it's a minority of people who do the vast majority of the work, and those are the people we should be focusing on. Those are the people who we should be helping to do what they can't already do, you know? Like maybe you don't have a radio show or something like that, and you can't record this and record the video and broadcast on all these things by yourself. I can, and so I give you the ability, something that which perhaps you cannot do yourself. And that's a small example of how one person can help another person, and then you've got all these people listening that winds up helping even more. You see what I'm saying? That's the paradigm that I'm after. You help people who've already helped themselves by doing things for them that they can't quite do for themselves yet.
I couldn't agree more. I really like that. It's like the founding fathers. There were how many signed the Declaration? It wasn't the whole country. It was these inspired individuals that had been through trials and tribulation and felt what life is, that hard, you know, reality check, that things aren't always going to be the way you want them to. And it's the people that lift themselves up by the bootstraps, like these inventors, or like the artists of the world, or the musicians, the people trying to express themselves, that's where the imagination and technology and magic come together.
Indeed. And lastly, just before we get off, I'm sorry, I need to change topic here, but my friend James Wright, who is exposing the 33rd degree, the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, is currently living in his car, ladies and gentlemen. He's been kicked out, he's being demonized, he's being attacked and stuff like that. And his editor for his book has said that he can stay with him in order to continue writing, but he's in California. And currently, James is in Texas, so he needs some money just for gas, just to get from Texas to California. So if people could please donate, I think it's going to cost maybe $300. If somebody can donate me $300, I will forward that on to James. We've already had somebody donate $50, and I want to get James to California so that he doesn't have to live in his freaking car. In order to do his really important work exposing the Supreme Council, and he's the biggest high-level whistleblower in Freemasonic history, ladies and gentlemen. So please, if you can, just open your wallets and just get that guy to California, if you can, please. All right, that's out of the way. Josh, thank you very much for coming on the show with me today. Your YouTube channel, youtube.com/JToms111, and on Facebook, .com/josh.toms.7. That's josh.toms.7. Thank you very much for your time today, my friend.
Pleasure.
All right. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And I hope you have really enjoyed the broadcast that we try and put together for you, because it's so easy for me to say that I just, you know, come here and jump on the radio and just spurtle BS out of my mouth for a couple of hours or something like that, and apparently people really appreciate it. So I'm really glad that you do. I just hope that you become part of that small determined minority that chooses to take action with this knowledge and don't just sit back and keep listening for more. Make something happen today. We'll see you again sometime.